We received an apology of Honorable Dikeledi. She's at Wits Business School, and she's one of the MPs who are studying, so she won't be here for this week. We're still waiting for Honorable Natin Hleko to find his feet. We hope he will be part of our meeting at least by tomorrow. It takes a little bit longer to find yourself around here if you have not been here for some time. So we still have a vacancy. Yes, also Honorable Hlengwa and Nkwankwa, I'm told they send their apologies. I know Honorable Nkwankwa is on his way to London today. I saw it on social media that he'll be traveling from one country to the other. So today, Honorable Members, you will be aware that the program actually changed. So we were supposed to deal with the FFC annual report. We will deal with it tomorrow. So today we're going to deal with the financial sector regulations. Documentation has been sent, but part of that documentation was a letter from the EFF. And now that Honorable Floyd Shibabambo is not here, maybe we'll pack the letter, because we are going to give him an opportunity to express his views in relation to the letter here in the meeting. But then, let me take you on the main.
Thank you, Chair. Congratulations on your acting chairpersonship, and thank you for your compliments on the birth of my daughter. I appreciate that. I will circulate some pictures. And thank you for the committee's letter in that regard. I really do appreciate it. Just in respect of the program, I did write a note to the chairperson today making proposals for the program, but I believe we'll deal with that next week. More materially, we're dealing with the FFC tomorrow, and I did write to the chair, I wasn't aware that you were the acting chair, requesting a copy of the National Treasury's forensic audit report into the FFC, which was completed before April last year. I think that we need to have sight of that forensic report before the hearing commences tomorrow.
Honourable Mayor, it was also not brought to my attention that you wrote a letter, so I don't have a copy of the letter, and the Chair has not really advised me on that. I will consult with him after the meeting, so that before the end of business today, I will advise you as to what were the engagements in relation to that. So I'll communicate with you later on in the afternoon. So, Honourable Members, I don't know who's leading the team. I see...
Apologies. Momo is also in Washington today. So. Chair, I'm not in Washington.
Let's take it that they're going to tie and tame Donald Trump.
Okay, let's get the presentation.
Okay, thank you, Chair. We've got a few presentations, but we are quickly going to go through the Financial Sector Regulation Act regulations. As we'll explain in a moment, how we agreed between ourselves is that we would always submit regulations to Parliament for 30 days for comments, and so we did submit the regulations in February, but... we unfortunately didn't have an opportunity to present to you. I think there were two times that it was set up, but then it didn't work out. And so we're very excited to say that the two regulators have been set up. And we'll explain the two regulators that are now functioning. But we'll go through the regulations in quite a lot of detail, because I think it's quite important, you know, in terms of how we agreed between ourselves, that we will always take you through our regulations and explain what we're trying to do.
I don't know whether did you see the copy of the letter written by Honorable Shibambo, because in it, it also raises a question that suggests that the regulations presented currently are not the same as that were presented before. So he raises that question, and that question will have to be responded to. The other matters that we are packing, that we will not engage in the meeting for now, is the allegations he's making about certain members of National Treasury. So I don't know whether members saw the letter. You didn't see the copy of the letter? But you should have sent it yesterday so that they can look at it. Oh, he's here. No, we're talking about you. I'm talking about you and the letter you wrote. Honorable Shibambo, you see you are late, and then now we'll deal with the letter after. Now that you are late, we're not going to give you the benefit of doubt of arriving late and we give you the priority. Let's get Jonathan to break a presentation and then we'll deal with the issues that you are raising at a later stage.
Yeah, thank you. I'm going to ask Kershaw to go through the presentation and just explain what the regulations try and do, and also explain, after we publish them for public comment, why we made certain changes.
Thanks very much, Roy. The presentation has been circulated. The one change that was made was this initial page, as Roy has mentioned. Twin Peaks has gone live, and this is just the implementation in action, so the launch of the new FSCA and the Prudential Authority that happened on effectively the 1st of April, but this all happened on the 3rd of April after the Easter break. So just to run through the regulations published in relation to the FSR Act, these were done in terms of Section 304 of the FSR Act, which states that the Minister of Finance may make regulations to provide for matters that are necessary to provide for the appropriate implementation of the FSRA that may not be addressed in the Act. I think this is because, given the significance of the reform process, we realized that in the initial first phase of implementing the reforms, there would be provisions that we need to manage the transitional process that would be more sensibly placed in subordinate regulations than in the primary law. So the regulations are intended to clarify the performance of functions in terms of the Act during the transitional period prior to the establishment of the regulators. We needed to also provide for the establishment of the Financial Services Tribunal. The intended purpose of the regulations is to facilitate the smooth implementation of the FSR Act and the establishment of the regulators and the tribunal. The second part of the regulations is made in terms of Section 61(4) of the FSR Act, and that requires the Minister of Finance to provide for a process for selecting persons as Commissioner and Deputy Commissioners of the new Financial Sector Conduct Authority. That section of the regulations therefore provide for the process of advertising and panels to shortlist, interview, and recommend candidates for appointment by the Minister of Finance. And the effect of the regulations is to provide for a fair and transparent process for the appointment of a commissioner and deputy commissioners. Just to speak briefly of the process of promulgating these regulations, so on the 18th of December last year, and this was following the enactment of the FSR Act, we published draft regulations on the National Treasury website, and a notice of that publication was also published in the Government Gazette. We're required to have a 6-week period for public comment, and that would have been completed on the 31st of January this year. And then also in terms of the required process in the law, before promulgating the regulations, they must be submitted to Parliament for a period of at least 30 days while Parliament is in session. And on the 15th of February, we submitted draft regulations and other supporting documents. I've got a slide that speaks to those. We also submitted the comments that were received during the comment period and an indication of our responses to those. As Roy has mentioned, we did have two scheduled meetings that were supposed to take place, but those shifted and we're having that session today. The regulations did need to be promulgated prior to the establishment of the authorities, and the tribunal, which was set down as the 1st of April to coincide with the start of the new financial year. And therefore the final regulations and the commencement notice were published in the Government Gazette as well on the 29th of March 2018. The documents that were circulated on the 15th of February, I think they were circulated electronically. I do also have soft copies of those. So it was the draft regulations that were published for comments in December 2017. It included a statement explaining the need for and the intended operation of the regulations, a statement of the expected impact of the regulations, and an impact assessment for the FSR Act. It included the notice that was published in the Government Gazette inviting submissions in relation to the draft regulations, and a report of the consultation process, which included a general account of the issues raised and a response to the issues raised. That was a short 10-page comments matrix that accompanied the regulation. I'll just take you through quickly a summary of what the regulations provide for. In a very brief summary, the regulation one is the usual definition. There are four short definitions there. Part one of the regulations then addresses certain transitional measures, and part two of the regulations, the appointment of the commissioner and deputy commissioners. Regulation two in part one addresses the issue of who would exercise powers of provisions of the FSR Act come into operation prior to the establishment of the PA, the FSCA. I think in the end, the publication of the regulations and establishment of the regulators actually converged on the 1st of April, but this was really to minimize any uncertainties that may have arisen. For example, if a decision had to be taken to establish one regulator prior to the other, that transitional process would be smoothly managed. So Regulation 2.1 provides that if any provisions of the Act come into operation prior to the PA being established, a reference to a financial sector law other than the Financial Markets Act that makes reference to prudential authority or a reference to a financial sector regulator must be read as referring to and including a reference to the Reserve Bank. The Reserve Bank would have to perform the functions of the PA, and we would have had brought into effect Section 1A of the Financial Markets Act that designates the exercise of powers in terms of that Act. Regulation 2.2 then similarly provides for what would happen if provisions of the Act come into operation prior to the establishment of the Conduct Authority, and that provides that a reference to the FSCA or to a financial sector regulator should be read as referring to the Financial Services Board, that the executive of the Financial Services Board designated in terms of the Financial Services Board Act must perform the functions of the FSCA. The executive officer of the Financial Services Board must perform the functions of the Financial Sector Conduct Authority, and in respect of the Financial Markets Act, again, Section 1A of that exercise. And again, this was in the event that, for example, the PA came into effect before the Financial Sector Conduct Authority did. Regulation 2.3 then gives just a bit more in terms of the transitional process for the Conduct Authority, and it states that if the FSCA is established prior to the Fees and Levies chapter, which is Chapter 16, comes into effect, a reference to the board must be read as a reference to the Financial Sector Conduct Authority, and Chapter 16 in the commencement notice will only come into effect on the 1st of April next year. The intention of this is to make it clear that the Conduct Authority can continue to be funded in accordance with the existing Financial Services Board Act, and this is intended to be until we have a Financial Sector Levies Act in place that allows for the raising of levies by the new authority rather than provisions through the FSB Act. In terms of revision, a minor revision was proposed, was made just in terms of adding a clause reference in 2.1b. Moving on to Regulation 3, and that deals with the management of the transitional process to establish the FSCA. The draft regulations provided that if Chapter 4 of the Act establishing the FSCA comes into effect before the appointment of a commissioner and deputy commissioners, the executive of the FSB, under the oversight of the board, must perform the functions of the executive committee of the FSCA to facilitate the disestablishment of the old organization and the establishment of the new one in an efficient and effective manner with least disruption until we have the new appointments in place. There was some concern raised on that draft regulation that there was no direct provision for a commissioner, and there are a few provisions in the Act that provide certain functions performed by a commissioner directly, and these are things like representation on coordinating platforms like the Council of Regulators or the Stability Council, for example. And so we were requested to provide clarity on that. And so to minimize potential conflicts of interest in the appointment process for the new Commissioner and Deputy Commissioner, the revised draft provides for a transitional management committee, which is still comprised of the Exco of the FSB. The chair of the board then is designated to act as that commissioner, and we've included an independent candidate that is external to the FSB to be included in that committee to ensure a transitional, a transparent transitional process from the old organization to the new organization. Regulation 3.2 then, similar to the draft regulations, continues to set out the functions that this transitional committee will perform while acting as the executive committee of the conduct authority. 3.3 addresses how funding will be handled during the transition period, and again the intention is for an interim period to use the funds raised by the FSB, and this is until a Levies Act is in place to allow for the conduct authority to raise its own levies. Regulation 3.4 was slightly amended for clarity in providing that the FSB will remain in place until the board of the FSB will remain in place until the 30th of November, and this is to ensure that the annual report of the FSB is tabled in line with legal requirements. 3.4 also provides for the members of the Transitional Management Committee to remain in an advisory capacity once the Commissioner and Deputy Commissioners have been appointed, so that there's a smooth handover process. That will be for 3 months. And then 3.5 addresses how reporting of financial statements will be handled during the transitional period. And we've tried as far as possible to coincide with traditional financial starts of the 1st of April and the end of March. Regulation 4 then addresses the establishment of the Financial Services Tribunal. We were not able, a requirement of having the regulators established is that the tribunal is also established at the same time to hear, to consider decisions made by the two regulators as required by the law. Regulation 4.1 provides that the FSCA must provide initial secretarial, administrative and other support for the tribunal, and allows for them to enter into agreements with the PA to provide for the sharing of costs. This is until the 1st of April 2019, when the Levies Act will hopefully have been enacted, and the tribunal will be able to raise their own levies to fund their activities. A change that was made is that the Financial Intelligence Center has also been included, including for the sharing of costs. The tribunal will also be hearing decisions of the Financial Intelligence Center, and that's why it was included. And then Regulation 4.2 just addresses the process in terms of what rules, regulations, and guidelines would be applied by the tribunal to handle cases until 1st April 2019. Regulations 5 and 6, so Regulation 5 deals with how documents that are required to be published on the register that's mentioned in the FSR Act are to be published prior to the register being formally established, as this may take a little bit of time to get into place. And then Regulation 6 is really just on interpretation of when reference is made to chapter, part, or section, to make sure that the references are clearly understood. And then the last part of the regulations deal with the appointment of the Commissioner and Deputy Commissioners of the Financial Sector Conduct Authority. Regulation 7 addresses how the advertising of positions of Commissioner and Deputy Commissioner must be made. Regulation 8 sets out requirements for applications. In both of those, minor corrections were made with errors that were noted. Regulation 9 provides for the establishment of a shortlisting panel for vetting applications and shortlisting candidates. We did get comments on that regulation that we should consider providing more specification of the expertise on who should serve on that panel, and the wording of that sub-regulation 2 was therefore made, and it states that the shortlisting panel therefore comprises the DG of the Treasury or a DDG nominated by the DG, a Deputy Governor of the Reserve Bank as nominated by the Governor, the Commissioner of the National Consumer Commission or that Commissioner's nominee, a representative of either the Ethics Institute of South Africa or the Institute of Directors in Southern Africa, or another body that focuses on ethics and good governance in the financial sector, and a person designated by the Minister who has suitable experience and expertise in the financial sector and knowledge of the financial sector that would enable them to appropriately consider and assess the suitability of candidates. So the shortlisting panel for the first appointments, the inaugural appointments of Commissioner and Deputy Commissioners, must include the Chairperson of the Financial Services Board. On my slide, there's just a repeated sentence on minor wording refinements proposed to sub-regulation 5 and 6, and that was really just to include the correct clause cross-reference there. Regulation 10 then provided for the appointment of a ministerial panel to interview shortlisted candidates and recommend a preferred candidate. Similar comments again were made in relation to the ministerial panel as had been made for the shortlisting panel, and so in the interest of providing further clarity, the regulation specified that the ministerial panel must consist of the minister's chairperson, the director general of the National Treasury, the governor or deputy governor of the Reserve Bank nominated by the governor, and again a person designated by the minister with suitable experience and expertise in the financial sector. Regulation 11 that sets out criteria for candidates to be suitable for shortlisting and interviewing, with the criteria intended to ensure that they are strongly qualified candidates with a range of appropriate expertise and experience. We strengthen the required years of experience from 7 years to 10 years, and then Regulation 12 just provides for the short title and commencement. And yeah, that's my presentation on the draft regulation.
We can continue straight on to the present. So that just gives you like the high level, the transition in terms of the regulations. I think maybe we can just go on directly to the presentation from the Prudential Authority in terms of what they are doing.
Before honourable members, I made a mistake. During the recess period, we lost one of the officials in National Treasury, Ghost. Can we just have a moment silence? Thank you. Please be seated. The chairperson has also forwarded the message on behalf of the committee to the family of Ghost. Okay, honourable members. I thought we were going to take the presentations, like I said earlier on, and entertain all other issues that came from the presentations. And we agreed. Now, the Honorable Floyd came after we have taken the decision. He's not aware that we said we're going to address the issues and his concerns that he raised through the letter, because that's why the letter was distributed in the meeting. So we're not going to change the decision just because he came late. We're going to take all the presentations, and then after that, we'll entertain all the issues that he has raised in the letter. May we take the presentation, please? Is it you?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. So we've also prepared just a few slides that talks to really an update of where we are with the establishment of the Prudential Authority. Many of the things that we have in these slides we did discuss last year, just to give the committee a sense of what we plan in terms of implementation of the Prudential Authority. So we'll talk about how we envisage us transforming into a fully integrated Prudential Authority for the financial sector. We'll spend a bit of time talking about the actual organizational structure of the PA and the appointments and so on that have been made in terms of the leadership structure of the Prudential Authority. We'll also talk about the Prudential Committee, which is a statutory committee that FISRA establishes for the Prudential Authority, and the levies bill, which is important for us in terms of the funding arrangements for the work that we do, the cooperation and collaboration arrangements that are required by FISRA and where we are with respect to that, and also what we envisage in the next couple of years in terms of the progressive realization of the mandate of the PA. I will also talk about the financial stability mandate of the bank, because in addition to what Fizra says about the regulatory responsibilities of the SARB, it also gives, as you know, the explicit financial stability mandate of the South African Reserve Bank. So I'll touch a little bit about coming attractions in that space. So in terms of where we are as the PA, so the PA is taking over responsibilities from the current Office for Banks, which already exists in the South African Reserve Bank, and it's also taking over responsibilities with regards to CFI and Co-op Banks supervision from the CBDA, and as you will be aware, we're also taking over prudential supervision of insurers from the FSB, and an important addition is the responsibility that we are taking over for prudential supervision of securities and derivatives financial market infrastructures. So what we are envisaging is that in the next 2 to 3 years, we will be developing an approach that really has a fully integrated package of prudential supervision and regulation within the Prudential Authority, which includes what we are inheriting from the various institutions, but also adds the responsibilities that the FISRA is quite explicit that we need to also develop, for example, conglomerate supervision and significant owners. So that's the envisaged transformation path, if you like, that will develop and result into a fully fledged, integrated prudential authority in terms of regulation and supervision. So that's what that slide is talking to. In terms of the institutional arrangements internally, so the FISRA requires that where we have a prudential committee which is comprised of the governor as chair and the rest of the deputy governors as members of the prudential committee, including the deputy governor that is designated as the CEO of the prudential authority. So the governor has appointed deputy governor Kuben Naidu, the former registrar of banks, as the CEO of the prudential authority, and FISRA requires that that appointment be made with the concurrence of the minister, and the minister has given that concurrence. So with effect from the 1st of April, Deputy Governor Kuben Naidu is the CEO of the Prudential Authority. And the rest of the Deputy Governors are members of the Prudential Committee, and Governor, as I mentioned earlier, is the chair of the PRUCO. And in addition to that, the Prudential Authority is made up of 4 departments, 2 of those departments, and I think we did mention this to the committee last year, 2 of those departments are frontline supervision departments, so they look after the regulated institutions from a frontline supervision point of view, so they look after all of the regulated institutions that are within the purview of the Prudential Authority, being banks, insurers, securities and derivative market infrastructures, cooperative financial institutions, and there's a dedicated department that is headed by Suzette Fokker-Sang from the FSB, who looks after that. And the second frontline department is financial conglomerates, which FISRA has got a process to designate and to look after, and that department is overseen by Denzel Bostander, who is the former deputy registrar of banks. And then we've got a risk support, a specialist department that looks after the individual risk areas for all the financial institutions that we look after in terms of market risk, liquidity risk, LM, actuarial, operational risk, credit risk, and so on. So we've got Faisal Jina, who is joining us from the 1st of May, effective from the 1st of May, who looks after the risk support department. And I look after policy, statistics, and industry support. And the next slides will talk about the actual composition and content of those departments which make up the Prudential Authority. So in terms of the banking insurance market infrastructures and CFI departments, which is looking after, we've got CFIs, cooperative financial institutions, and top banks in that department. and we also have got specialists or, if you like, solo type of banks which are not part of large financial conglomerates. They're also located in that department. And also we've got specialists of solo insurance companies which are not part of large conglomerates or groups, which are part of that department. And she also looks after market infrastructures. So all the five categories of market infrastructures in terms of the FMA, the Financial Markets Act, that we are looking after as the Prudential Authority. The next department, as I have mentioned, looks after the risk types that emerge in the balance sheets or the financial statements of financial institutions. That we look after credit risk and quant, operational risk and IT risk, market risk, liquidity risk, LM actuarial, and also the remainder of the part that we're still working on in terms of the solvency assessment management, which is the new prudential approach for insurers, and also IT and statistics. So that's the risk department that Faisal Jina will be looking after when he joins us effective 1 May 2018. In terms of financial conglomerates, we still have to go through the process that actually designates financial conglomerates as outlined in FISRA, but Denzel Bostander is going to be looking after that department in addition to the actual financial conglomerates. Once we've designated them and gone through the process, he also looks after our approach in terms of anti-money laundering and CEFT. And I look after policy state and industry support, and it includes policy formulation, so the policy division, the actual supervisory framework that the frontline departments implement in their ongoing frontline supervision. I also look after legal support for the Prudential Authority, enforcement and resolution actions for the Prudential Authority, and also industry support and analysis, and that includes aspects on industry analysis itself in terms of high-level aggregate analysis of the data. In addition to that, accounting regulatory issues is also part of that, and also the actual industry technical support, which includes capital management and all the support that we provide to frontline analysis in terms of that work. So those are the four departments which report to the CEO of the Prudential Authority, and all of those, the leaders in terms of those departments have been appointed, with the exception of Faisal Jina, who is only joining us on the 1st of May. So the leadership structure of the Prudential Authority is more or less in place. So in terms of the Prudential Committee, the FISRA requires us, in terms of Section 41, to establish a Prudential Committee, which is really, like we said when we presented this to the committee, a non-executive board, if you like, or a governance structure that oversees the operations of the Prudential Authority, and that Prudential Committee is in place. We have had our first meeting on the 16th of April. Actually, yesterday was the first statutory meeting. We did have last month a planning meeting of the Prudential Committee so that we can set out what the work plan and the responsibilities and the delegations and so on are of the Prudential Committee to enable them to actually lead and oversee the work of the Prudential Authority. So that's already in place. And in terms of funding arrangements, so while we wait for the levies bill, the SARB is providing and is required to provide, in terms of the Financial Sector Regulation Act, all of the resources that the Prudential Authority requires to exercise its mandate. And our 2017-18 financial year budget is $287 million. And we have already gone through the process internally in the sub within the sub governance arrangements for our 2018-19 budget that we are going to require, taking into account all of the new stuff that we are taking on, but also the increase in headcount given the increase in the scope and responsibilities of the Prudential Authority, and that is increasing to $295 million in the 2018-19 financial year. So we are funded by the SARB, from their own resources until we have the levies bill funding arrangements in place. So just a little bit about what we are going to be doing differently from the current framework. So obviously, it is common cause that we were only as the sub looking after banks, and we focused our responsibilities around the Banks Act and Basel III in terms of what we were responsible for until the 1st of April. We are now taking over responsibility for the Insurance Act, which must be implemented on the 1st of July, and we are also taking on the responsibilities for the securities and derivatives market infrastructures in terms of the Financial Markets Act, although in terms of that framework, FSCA remains the lead authority. So we are only looking after prudential aspects of those types of FMI. In addition, FSRA requires us to have a significant owners framework. So we've always had this concept of shareholder of reference, although it was not really formalized in the Banks Act, and FSRA assists us in actually defining and giving us specific powers around how we oversee significant owners, and this responsibility is shared between the PA and FSCA. In addition, we work with the Reserve Bank in terms of its responsibilities around financial stability in overseeing CFIs and actually producing prudential standards which have a specific aim around the management and maintenance of financial stability. And Kesha did talk to the new arrangements around the Financial Sector Tribunal, which replaces the current arrangements, because currently in the Banks Act we have a board of review, so that is replaced by the Financial Sector Tribunal in terms of people appealing our decisions and so on. But I think importantly to also mention is that FSRA also outlines specific approaches that the Prudential Authority should pursue: risk-based, forward-looking, proportional to the risks that emanate in individual institutions, and our supervisory framework that we are developing as a Prudential Authority talks to those elements that are outlined in FSRA in terms of how we supervise the very differing types of financial institutions that are now the responsibility of the Prudential Authority. An important focus as well of FSRA is working together within the official sector, or amongst financial regulators in the official sector. So we have dedicated resources that we actually have asked to be working on the MOUs that we are required to have in terms of FSRA. FSRA requires us to have MOUs with FSCA, with the NCR, with the FIC, and most importantly, the MOUs that we need to have with FSCA, for example, we need to have in the first 6 months of establishment. And I'm happy to say that we've made lots of progress that is going to actually be able to place in good stead to meet the 6 months time frame within which we need to be to finalize these MOUs. And these MOUs talk to the concurrence requirements that FSRA requires us to have with FSCA. Something I said? Something I did? Oh. And importantly, we are also required to have an MOU with the SARB in terms of the SARB's responsibility as a financial stability regulator. So all of that work is underway so that in 6 months' time, which is October 2018, we will be able to have those MOUs in place as required by legislation. In fact, the Financial Stability Oversight Committee also, I think last month, had a planning meeting so that they can understand what is required of them in terms of FSRA. And the FSOC, as you know, is comprised of not just the central bank, but also the Treasury, FSCA, and the National Credit Regulator are also members of the Financial Sector Oversight Committee. The primary interactions between the PA and FISCA, slide 14 talks to that. So the two key licensing, which is also part of what we have in the MOUs that we are busy negotiating with FISCA. Regulatory instruments, so the prudential standards that we need to produce, and also joint standards that FISRA requires us to produce. We are required to do that with the concurrence of FISCA. The designation of financial conglomerates, we are also required to be consulting FISCA once we've made those decisions as the PA, the significant owners framework specifically, where we decide to make a determination that an institution is not a significant owner, we are required to get the concurrence of FISCA. And there are also requirements in Chapter 9 of FISRA in terms of inspections and investigations where we are supposed to be working together as required by FISRA. So those are the main touch points, if you like, between the PA and FISCA. And furthermore, there are also specific interactions between the Prudential Authority as a micro-prudential arm of the central bank and the SARB as the macro-prudential authority for systemic stability or financial stability. So the SARB is the macro-prudential regulator, and it looks, if you like, I mean, the example that's always given is that the SARB or the macro-prudential regulator looks after the entire forest, whereas the PA looks after the individual trees. But the construct of FISRA is that the SARB works through the prudential authority as the macro-prudential regulator and supervisor in terms of producing prudential standards that achieve the objectives of the SARB. So that's what slide 15 is talking to. And importantly, the responsibility around contributing to financial stability is not just a SARB and the Prudential Authority responsibility. FISCA also has got in their mandate an explicit responsibility to be contributing to financial stability. So, in terms of coming attractions towards the progressive realization of the mandate of the PA, FISRA does talk to a period of 3 years where we should be expecting to be taking on additional financial types of financial institutions unless the minister makes a different determination, and it talks to pension funds, collective investment schemes, friendly societies, and so on. And we are readying ourselves in the next 3 years to be able to take these onto the actual scope of the prudential authority as outlined in FISRA. In terms of financial stability, and I've mentioned before, so FISRA doesn't just talk to changes to the regulatory, micro-prudential regulatory responsibility of the prudential authority, but also talks to an explicit financial stability. I can try to out preach them, say if I can. So in terms of the financial stability mandate of the SARB, like I've mentioned before, the Financial Stability Oversight Committee has been established, and they've had their planning meeting, and we have got a schedule for the year for FSOC to meet. And in terms of future work, that will definitely have implications for the committee is the resolution bill, which includes the deposit guarantee scheme, which is part of that work, which we are looking forward to having deliberations with the committee on going forward. It's got obviously important implications for us as a micro-prudential supervisor and as a PA. So that's really the long and short about where we are. So we are on track. We have been established, and we have a plan for the progressive realization of our mandate to the Prudential Authority, and we're looking forward to the next 2-3 years where we will hopefully fully realize the mandate of the Prudential Authority as envisaged in the Financial Sector Regulation Act. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Unfortunately, we couldn't get representatives from the FISCO to attend because they had...
You'll have to speak very loud. I only hear that guy. I can't hear anything in this meeting.
Sorry, Chair. Unfortunately, we didn't get... unfortunately, it was too late to organize for people from the Financial Sector Conduct Authority to come, but Kershaw will present on them. And sorry, Chair, I didn't tell you in the beginning that Kershaw has very recently been promoted to look after market conduct authorities. So let's congratulate her on her promotion. So that she's more than capable, I think, of explaining what the... She's been working very closely with them to from the Treasury side to ensure that they are ready.
Thanks very much, Roy. So, again, it's just a brief presentation to give a sense of the preparations for the implementation of the new conduct
document. Are you going to refer to now?
I'm not sure that this one
was circulated. Sorry, Chair.
But so we'll make sure that
we'll
Alan
copies,
has a.
Yeah.
That I've saved a copy on this laptop.
One of the things
I have a soft copy.
Yeah, we can try and have them printed for you, Chair.
No, I'm not going to accept it. You know, you always do this to us, guys. You don't give us documentation, and you want us to consider and apply our minds. Now, I tend to agree with Floyd on this. Can we have copies of the document? We did not even see it.
Okay, no, that's fine. Maybe we should then let this one send over, then go on to the next one about the levies bill.
Yeah, this we can just write electronically.
You know, I wanted to ask something because, you know, we just wrote a letter with the chairperson about the bills. I was not aware that there's a bill that's going to be presented today. We co-signed a letter to the minister that says we're not going to entertain any further bills because of the time that we're going to spend here. I'm not sure whether it's just an introduction and how what is going to be the status of this bill, Advocate Jenkins, is going to be presented now. We need to guide us before we even entertain it.
Sure. I'm not aware that that was a draft bill that was introduced as such. I think that it's I mean, what it is then, ma'am, is sort of a preliminary, should it be presented, a preliminary presentation for the committee to prepare its work around it and to see how they're going to approach it, maybe to deal with the programming of the bill. That's usually the focus when bills are, in terms of the rules, preceded by a draft bill. Money bills don't have to, as Roy just pointed out to me, money bills don't have to be preceded by a draft bill. But the Treasury has time, or from time to time, brought a draft bill. So what it does to the committee is just prepare yourselves for deliberating, receiving it and deliberating on it. So you don't take any decisions on it as such. But it's part, I mean, the committee is still in charge of its procedure, man.
You see, in the document, it's written as introduced.
Oh, no, that's it hasn't been introduced
yet. I'm talking to the document. It's written as introduced. Here is it. So it's very important how you use the terminology you use, because we can be taken to task for this type of terminology. Because once you say as introduced, this is something else.
Chair, we're actually proposing...
Yeah, I'll come to members. Let's clarify with him. So that we agree what is going to be the status, so that if we entertain this, we know and we change the wording on the bill itself. Jenkins?
No, ma'am, the
state... come to you.
Sorry, ma'am, my apologies. Looking at the face of this bill, the status of it is it not introduced. I mean, it hasn't a bill number. It will get a bill number when it's introduced. It also get what's called an ISBN number, which is a sort of internationally recognized number for a document. That we allocate from the bill's office when a bill is introduced. So that has not happened. So this is the status of this. The question you have is that this is very much a draft bill, although the wording is confusing, I agree.
Yeah, it's got B 2018, you see, and then it's got S introduced. So can we change it? I think we agree in principle. Let the wording be changed so that it must not create problems for us going forward. I think that's what you agree. Honorable Shibambo?
If we agreed on the format of the meeting before I arrived here, you can't take regulations and then you take Judicial Authority, and now you want to discuss a presentation on a bill, and you want to discuss that in one package. It's not sensible. Let's discuss what has been presented now, and then if there's a bill presentation which we agree upon, we'll entertain that as a separate discussion. There are issues that have to be clarified now. So let us not have a chakalaka discussion. Let us compartmentalize the whole discussion and know what we're dealing with so that we're able to take certain specific resolutions. And then we'll take it from there and not confuse all these things. So that is, I think, how we should move like that. Chair.
Honorable Mayor.
Chair, I also think that we should deal with the procedural issues. I mean, I think there's a major question mark about where the Treasury have complied with the section in the with section 288 in actually setting out these regulations. For example, I mean, the regulations needed to be actually provided to Parliament. It doesn't appear to me that these regulations or documents have ever been tabled in Parliament, although they appear to have been furnished to this committee. So that's a major question. Equally, it doesn't appear to me that any documentations around the impact of the regulation themselves have been produced. So I think that in addition to some of the questions that the Honourable Floyd Chivambu wants to raise, I also have some questions about procedure.
Honourable members, when the meeting started, I explained to your good self that one concern has been raised by Honorable Chivambu in relation to process. And I said in the meeting, because he's not here, we'll discuss that later. Let's take presentations. And we agreed. And it was not even about the contents and the procedures of the regulations that I said we should continue. It was on the basis of the presentations are here. And you all know that an acting chairperson does not decide the content of the meeting in terms of documentation. I did not decide which documentation should come before the meeting. I was just requested to chair the meeting. So I know for a fact that we were not going to take further bills. That's why I'm raising it here, because I co-signed a letter with the chairperson about not taking any further bills except those that we have already agreed upon, written for the attention of the minister last week. So I only saw this document in the package yesterday about the levies bill. That's why I myself upfront is raising it. And that's why I wanted to understand what's going to be the status of this document, especially as it's worded in the manner in which it's worded. So I brought these matters up front to your good self, because I wanted you to be the ones who decide whether you want to discuss this bill, given the fact that the chairperson and I has agreed in principle not to take any further bills this year. So I wanted you to decide about the bill, the levies bill. But in relation to the presentations, you're going to have a discussion now about what you want to say and how you want to receive this presentation, because that has been said up front. So had Honorable Chivambu been on time, we would have started with the letter and agreed whether we want to put. Members of the DA never saw the letter. It was not distributed. It was only distributed to me by the chair yesterday evening. Yesterday evening, because the letter was written Saturday, 21 minutes past 11, when Honorable Chivambu and I was at the funeral by the researchers of the EFF to the chair. So probably the chair only saw the letter yesterday because he was traveling, and that's why in the evening he sent me a copy, of which I could not be able to consult anybody at night about whether we should entertain. I decided then we will bring the letter here because it raised a fundamental issue on process, especially on 3-1. Other issues, Honorable Shivambo will have a latitude of explaining himself, but 3-1 is relevant for discussion. So we can't put I don't know whether it's the cart before the horse or the horse before the cart, but I know it can't be the cart before the horse. So you still need to first decide on the levies bill, whether you want to engage it, because in terms of how you introduce a bill at the preliminary level, given the fact that already we have said we can't this year take any further bills, and this bill just come through like this, I can't alone here when I agreed with the chairperson last week that we were not going to entertain, because once it's here, it must be implemented. So, Honorable Members, let's first discuss this one and come to the other ones. Honorable Shivam.
So, the bill which is the levies bill which is being presented here, it's one that should enable both the Prudential Authority and the Conduct Authority to function. To say that I thought that perhaps the insistence of the chair, which we must actually reject, that there must not be entertaining of any bills, was in the context of legislation, of starting new legislation. And he was raising it in the context of time, that this year there are so many commitments which the committee otherwise has to deal with. It will not be ideal to entertain legislation. But a levies bill is just to say that in order to finance the Prudential Authority and the Financial Sector Conduct Authority, you need to take levies from wherever you must take from. So it's a bill process that otherwise wouldn't take forever. And I'm saying, acting chair, that we should entertain other bills, because we, for instance, have put a private member's bill on the amendment of the Banks Act, which is just one sentence amendment, which will not be as intense as it would be. I know that the parliamentary office that deals with legislation is in the process of gazetting that in terms of the process. And I don't think that is an issue that otherwise would waste the time of Parliament. So let's entertain at a certain stage, maybe not today, this levies bill that is being presented here, because it has to be entertained, and then we'll possibly accommodate that one sentence amendment of the Banks Act in terms of what we got to propose. I think that is one issue that we have to deal with. But I would think that in terms of the sequencing of issues now, let us deal with these regulations that the National Treasury still has to clarify as to with which law did they implement some of the regulation provisions that are contained here. Yes.
We're coming to that issue. Let's finish this one of the levies bill first. I want you, Honorable Peggy.
Thanks, Chairperson. I think I really need to support Honorable Shivambo, because I've just perused through the bill. It does require us to look at how to source or finance the two institutions that have been established.
Honorable Liz, Honorable Maina, in that order, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just some clarity, please, because I'm a little bit confused about the levies. As I understood you saying, Roy, that the, it might have been you, Kish, I'm sorry, whoever, that the funding would be Saab funding for the year that we're in and the coming financial year. Just some clarity on that, and that the levies bill would only be implemented, I think, in 2019. I'm trying to find it. If it were approved in time. So I think it's an important aspect to clarify what we're all discussing here, whether we need to proceed or don't need to proceed. I'm sure there's some other issues of process, but let me come back to this.
Honourable Maina and Kesha, will you clarify also on that one so that we know
Just on the levies bill, I mean, if Parliament, my question would be, if Parliament fails to pass the levies bill in this financial year, what are the consequences?
Let's give it to you.
Thanks. Just to respond to the question of clarity, the intention is that we would like for the levies bill to be effective from 1 April 2019. And we would, process-wise, we would want to have it enacted before then so that it can be effective from 1 April 2019. The draft regulations do provide for the 1 April 2018 to end March 2019 financial year that the Conduct Authority will raise funds in terms of the FSB Act and the SARB will provide funding for the Prudential Authority. But we're hoping that they will be able to raise their own funds in terms of the Levies Act next year. If it's not in place by then, I suppose it would be for us to consider how to then provide for funding operations of those regulators on an interim basis.
Okay, before we Roy, maybe we'll respond in the process because I want us to know how long the process will take to consider the bill so that when we discuss whether the presentation should be taken now, then we know how long the process of the bill will take. Because in terms of consultation that you have already engaged upon with stakeholders and, you know, the public hearings, because I can assure you now we're going to be in trouble with the programming committee who decides when should members sit and so on. So I don't know whether do I have the powers to take such decisions here in this meeting today, because, like I said, already the chairperson has written to the minister, and now here is this important bill showing up now, and now it's going to change programming, because let me make you aware, we're rising now in May, and we're only going to come back in September. Is it August? No, it's August. In August. And it means we're going to lose time now in terms of public hearings and so on. And then in September, normally there's a week where we're not here, and then probably we're going to rise earlier because of elections. I don't know. Prot can advise us because at least he sits in the programming committee. If he can be able to win also the debate there. Because so in terms of process, just clarify how far you are so that we can measure whether what you're going to do here is going to work or not.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, we agreed, I think, with the committee in 2016 that, you know, we would keep you alive to all the different costs of Twin Peaks regulation. So we presented a draft levies bill, I think, in 2016, together with a draft costing in 2016. It was not possible at that stage. I think the committee wasn't able to try to pass the levies bill before the 1st of April, so I think we agreed that we would pass it in the April in this financial year, and then we would have an interim arrangement, as Kosha said. So that's just what we're trying to do. We're just trying to keep you updated in terms of all the thinking that we've had. We've had extensive consultation with industry already. We're going to have another set of consultation now that the this version of the bill is out. But just to Honourable Mania's question, obviously if the bill is not passed by 1 April 2019, then we don't actually know how we're going to fund the Financial Data Conduct Authority. We may have to, we don't actually know. We may just not have, and I think it's important when we get to the discussion, because I know this has come up in other hearings, you know, there is already a concern that they're underfunded and that they have resource constraints, and we certainly have seen a lot of problems in terms of resourcing on their side, and I think, you know, we must just take into account that implication.
I think we need to come to a conclusion where we say you need to make this presentation now, and then other logistical arrangements. Fred is not helping me because he's not saying anything about the programming, so I don't know, because I'm going to be knocked on my knuckles for having gone beyond my mandate of just chairing the meeting today. So can you help me to understand how far can the programming committee influence each other in terms of what must be on the agenda?
Do you know the very long research that we're going to have between May and August? I thought the programming committee had agreed in principle that if there is urgent issues that have to be dealt with in between them, they can be entertained. For instance, I know that you have a mandate from your own conference that you must change the Banks Act, so you might need to deal with that at a separate level. So the revenues bill must be passed. You've got very little options, so.
He's not telling me how
so
he will
what
the programming committee.
Just agree.
He is not helping me to tell me how he will influence the programming committee.
That
so I'll take the knocking. No.
If in principle you agree that or want to process it, we'll then deal with the mechanical issues on when do we meet and everything. We can always exchange dates later on. But the meeting, the committee has to sit to deal with that. And then when Parliament resumes in August, then the committee will then be ready to present it for decision in the National Assembly. So then we'll take it from there. I don't think that would be a bit of a problem. So I'm sure that we deal with these two legislations.
No, it's fine. You didn't help me, but it's fine. I already said let's agree to continue so that it's presented. Honourable Minister.
Chair, I think it's probably imperative that the levies bill be dealt with and passed before the end of this financial year. I'm not sure that we really need to spend time on it at this meeting. It was really just, if you like, a whiff. National Treasury, it seems to me, intended to give the committee a whiff and just a brief overview of the bill. I would suggest that Parliament and National Treasury introduce the bill when they're ready to introduce the bill, but that we deal substantially here with the regulations. And with the possible objections to those regulations, and that we allow the levies bill to be dealt with in terms of ordinary procedure, and that when it is finally tabled and introduced to this committee, that we deal with it then.
Finally, we're finding each other, because this is what I was trying to say to you, that today, let's not be worthy. It was not really supposed to be. We agree in principle. So, Roy, I don't think it's a wasted time. You will have a date to come and make the presentations that you want to make. So, members, now we come to the gist of the matter. It's process issues on the regulations and so on. And I see the sector is here. And I remember what we said when we were suggesting that there should be regulation. We, as the committee, assured the sector that if there's anything that is not captured properly, it will be captured through the regulations, and we will have an opportunity to engage on that. And now the regulations are gazetted. So I'm not going to say anything. I want people now to raise their views so that we can engage with that matter. And because Honorable Shivambo officially wrote a letter, let's start with him and give him the opportunity to raise his concerns, and then we'll come to Honorable Maina, and then we'll entertain discussions. Honorable Shivambo.
No, thanks. It's a simple issue, acting chairperson.
Yeah, I'm acting chairperson. I'm not a chairperson. I don't want
to.
I've been chairperson the 100 times.
That is why
you are not even here.
I'm emphasizing that.
You've many
years. There's procedure that the minister should follow before it makes regulations final, particularly transitional measures. And it's clear now that the regulations that are marked final, which were published on the 29th of March, and which have been used to make certain appointments, and did not follow the process that is prescribed in the legislation. So they are therefore unlawful in terms of what is required. And it's very clear, and it must be said here, that it looks like this DDG called Momo is a problem, because he wanted to smuggle Miss Gibson into the Financial Sector Conduct Authority, and he then changed the regulations to suit that, because the first regulations that had followed procedure did not permit him to do so. It had just said that the FSB executive should be the transitional committee. And then he went to change that because he wanted to smuggle Ms. Gibson, who in terms of the internal audit process of National Treasury, was wrongly appointed as a consultant of National Treasury. So it's one of the things that we have written to the minister, to the chair of the committee, and to the president, that they seem to be underhand dealings in terms of how this is handled. But also, in terms of the selection panels, like if you check how it's phrased, he's basically saying that the regulation must appoint him as the chair of the selection panel for the permanent place. It's there in the National Treasury presentation that he seems to be personalizing these transitional measures in an unsustainable and definitely unlawful way. So it's one of the issues that we as the committee should raise concern about, because it's inappropriate and should not be allowed to happen in that way. I don't know whether we're talking as well to the Provincial Authority. Are we talking about the Provincial Authority?
No, let's start with this.
Okay, yeah, I'll come back on the Provincial Authority in terms of what the Reserve Bank should do in the immediate. But the other issue that we must have to clarify lastly on this regulation is that, so the in terms of the transitional measures, the former chair of the Financial Services Board is Abel Stoll, who is the principal executive officer of the GPEB.
Yes.
So we must check if there's no conflictual role relationship between him occupying both positions as being the commissioner this side and being the PEO of the GPF. So there must be clarity of the legalities in terms of whether there's no conflictual relationship, because this thing must not take off from a wrong footing if genuinely it's meant to achieve what legislation says it should achieve. So those are the key issues that we wanted to raise, and the committee should take a posture in terms of that. Sure.
Thank you, Honorable Mina.
Thank you, Chair. Just, I'd just like some clarity. My understanding is that regulations are dealt with in terms of Section 288 of the Act, and that the regulations and other documentations would have to be furnished to Parliament. So my question is, were these documents tabled in Parliament, and if so, when were they tabled in Parliament? Which ATC were they tabled? In which ATC were they tabled? That's the first question. The second question, if I understand the Act correctly, requires that there be some kind of description of the impact, and presumably the financial impact of the regulations themselves. That doesn't seem to have been applied to, because it seems that the document that was used to comply with that section of the Act was the financial impact assessment, which was produced 19 months earlier, and is in fact an impact assessment of the legislation, not the regulations. So there seem to me to be some questions about whether National Treasury complied with the sections in the Act. These matters seem quite separate to the matters raised by the Honourable Shivambu, but I'd like the Treasury's response.
Thank you. Honourable
Nkonyini?
Thanks, Honourable Chairperson. For me, the issues that have been raised through the letter that has been presented by Honorable Shivambu are quite serious, Honorable Chairperson, and there are allegations, there are serious allegations here that need to be investigated, according to me. In other words, we just cannot proceed in terms of approving or agreeing to what has been presented here without having investigated the allegations that have been presented. So for me, we really need to consider investigating this.
Thank you, Honourable Members. I'm going to allow Roy and Keisha to respond, but I also want to advocate Jenkins, because, you see, Honourable Mena raised Section 288 of the Act in terms of procedure that needs to be followed in tabling. And he's asking at what point were this presented to the committee, because I also don't remember us entertaining such. So can we first clarify that so that we move towards the suggestion that members have just raised here with in the meeting in terms of how we're going to proceed? Roy?
Thank you, Chair. Yes. If you recall, we had a long discussion about regulations, I think, during the whole bill process, and there was a lot of discussion about how the Treasury could make regulations. In general, our laws previously had no provision for Parliament to exercise any oversight of the regulations, because, of course, regulations are an executive function, and generally the executive is left to make regulations sort of alone. And I think the view of the committee at the time was that that wasn't really the appropriate thing, because, you know, if you're giving powers to a minister to make regulations in terms of an act, at least Parliament should have sight of those regulations and should be given an opportunity to scrutinise those regulations and to engage with the minister or with the department that is making regulations on the content of those regulations. So if you recall, that's sort of where we came from originally. And so we did this, we started changing all of our laws quite a long time ago. Actually, the 2012 Financial Markets Act was the first time that I can remember that we agreed with the then committee to have a process that regulations would come to the committee for scrutiny. The next piece of legislation that we allowed for that was in the 2012 Credit Rating Services Act, and I think some of the changes in the later legislation also allow for that. Of course, some of the old legislation doesn't have that procedure. So, for example, the Banks Act, with the extensive regulations, don't have a procedure for Parliament to exercise any scrutiny. But the newer pieces of legislation do. So in that spirit, I think between the Treasury and the committee felt that they wanted a process in terms of giving an opportunity for Parliament to interact with the Treasury on the regulations. So if you go to Section 288 of the law, it says in Section 4, the Minister may not make a regulation unless the Minister has published a draft of the regulation, a statement explaining the need for and the intended operation of the regulation, a statement of the expected impact of the regulation, and a notice inviting submissions in relation to the regulation and stating how, where, and when the submissions are to be made. And then after he's done that, and once he's received all the submissions, the law says that the submissions, all those documents, paragraph 1, all the documents referred to in A Roman 4, must be submitted to Parliament. So it's quite important, because we had a long discussion, I remember, actually in 2012, about this terminology of tabling regulations versus submitting regulations. So the view of the legal advisors at the time, and actually I think it was Advocate Jenkins at the time, was that, you know, regulations are regulations, they're not bills. So we don't necessarily table bills, we actually just submit them to Parliament for comment. So the law actually says submitted to Parliament while in session, the documents mentioned in these paragraphs, and a report of the consultation process, which report must include a general account of the issues raised in the submissions and a response to the issues raised in the submissions. Now, it's very important to distinguish, which I think, just to clarify exactly the position, is that we don't send the final regulations to Parliament, because that would be a waste of your time. We send a draft of the regulations. We send a list of all the comments we've received on those regulations. We submit a list of all the things we are replying to on those things. And then we ask Parliament for an opportunity for a session to take you through it. And if Parliament has any proposed changes, or if this committee has any proposed changes, then we can include those at the time or and so forth. So I seem to recall that we did actually have two sessions scheduled with this committee. I think there was a session scheduled in February and then again in March. So the intention was always And we actually also had an engagement with the Select Committee on Finance and asked them if they wanted a session with us. Unfortunately, my understanding is that there were some problems and both of those sessions were cancelled. And so unfortunately, within that 30-day period, we didn't have an opportunity to engage with the committee on the regulations. And so that scrutiny period then elapsed. So, you know, unfortunately, you know, as Christian in the presentation, the intention was always for the authorities to come into effect on the 1st of April 2018, and we weren't sure if we had to wait for a session on Parliament like this one to explain the regulations. So that's, I guess, how it all came about, if that explains the procedure.
Okay, Jenkins.
Thank you, ma'am. My understanding is, if it says you must submit it to Parliament, there must be a record of that. So we will ATC it. I'm looking for a copy of that ATC.
Wait, honourable members. Let's handle it in a decent way. Let's have him say what he say. Then we'll discount it and so on and so forth. Let's just have him to say what he's saying. Then we'll come back. We have ample time. We're only discussing this issue today. Let him finish.
I mean, what Roy said, ma'am, is to an extent I agree, to an extent I disagree. The part I'm agreeing with is when it's submitted to Parliament. I mean, usually it's a term that's used when we don't need to approve it. But where I disagree is whether it's submitted or tabled in Parliament, we ATC it. There must be a record. Simply because if someone wants to challenge anything in those regulations, they can either do it on a procedural ground or a substantive ground. Substantive meaning it doesn't fit into the Act, and procedurally didn't follow the procedure that's prescribed. And if it says that you submit it to Parliament, much like me submitting an invoice, I can say but I've sent it. If the other person say I didn't receive it, it's a he say, she say issue, or she say, he say. Exactly. So the bottom line is, ma'am, that we need to ATC it. I'm going to stick my neck out a bit. I thought I did see it ATC, but everybody's telling me I didn't see it. But I thought sometime in the beginning of the year I saw something ATC. So I'm going to follow that up to see. Because the procedure needs to be complied with. The days that are prescribed in Section 288, those are normal days. I just want to say while I'm on the floor to the committee, those are normal days. Those are not working days. So that is looked at in light of what the Interpretation Act says. So it's normal days that it must be submitted. And the last issue I want to just say something while I have the microphone on, ma'am, is that as I understand Section 288, of course there can be regulations or draft regulations submitted to Parliament. We need to ATC it. The final regulations may differ, but if it differs in a material way, we need to redo the process.
No, so we have not discussed the...
No, I'm just...
We are first on the process issue. Okay, we're going to look at what is the content, because I want us to take issues step by step. Now, honourable members, let me remind you. You remember when I showed you the bill, I told you about legal implications. A terminology, it's got legal implications if it comes into a space of law. So submission of a draft, we need to clarify that, Advocate Jenkins, in terms of ATC, so that when we come to the materiality of the regulation, because we're still going to come there, we have first cleared this one. So that I don't know whether what time are we going to need to look at to whether they were ATC'd or not. Who is going to help us just to look at that part? But I want to remind the team something that was important about this specific regulations. There were issues that the sector was raising, and we said to them, those issues will be covered in the regulations. That's why it was very important for us to have a discussion on the regulations. And I'm going to give them a chance if they want to say anything. No, I'm coming to you, members. Don't worry. Your issues are covered. Don't go so fast. I'm not very fast. I don't know whether I want to say something about the issues of the regulations in terms of what you remembered about the discussion. Can you come to the microphone?
So, Chair, it was agreed that once regulations will be presented for public, we would have given comment and it would have been discussed as a committee. That's the way we understood it.
You see, I'm reminding you that part because that's how we agreed on this one. We said in this specific ones we're going to have that session. And now we have not had it. So you'll understand the implication of that decision that we took. Honorable Shivambo, now I want you to give... Advocate Jenkins, I'm giving you time so that you can check the ATC once members are still discussing, because I want them to go into the materiality that they want to engage on. Honorable Chibamba, I don't know whether you're going to the materiality or you want to discuss the process.
I think it's common cause now that the National Treasury did not follow the law. It acted unlawfully in terms of how it dealt with the regulations. There's no confusion about that. So he's trying to say now, because the meetings didn't happen and all of those things, he's running around in circles. And then they appointed an interim transitional team in an unlawful way. And perhaps we should take a resolution as the committee that those unlawful things must be made lawful, so they must reverse all those decisions. And if not, we'll then have to force them through court process to comply with the law, because what has happened now, and the subjective aspect of it acting chair, is because someone wanted to smuggle a personal favorite into the
transition. That's the issue that we want to park for now. And let's deal with this one.
The National Treasury must correct. That must be the outcome of this meeting. That let them make it lawful, or there will be serious consequences.
You see, Roy, what leads to Floyd making this second statement is because you didn't follow the procedure that you agreed on in terms of how we're going to proceed. And now it brings in this one that I don't want us to entertain, because Momo is not even here to respond for himself. And will be seen as unfair if we agree in principle that Momo wanted to smuggle people, because I'm not sure, I don't know, what informed you to not follow the procedure. And you have not explained why you did not do it, except that meetings were not held, Alan. Now, we're saying, let's do it the way we agreed, because we said we'll involve the sector. It must be here, we must look at the regulations, so that we allay the fears that they had at that time. Because that's how we allayed their fears at that time. We said, no, the regulations will cover everything. And we want to hear them saying the regulations has covered everything, as per the discussion. I know we're running against time, given the fact of this year is a problematic year, but it should be a fair process in terms of engagement and how the regulations look. I don't think for now we have, I don't even want to speak to the transitional issues and so on, because it's not a discussion currently. It's how you have dealt with them. And I want us members to agree to round up on this issue so that we go towards a situation where we say we need a second session where at least we should have, even if it's a one-day meeting with everybody invited, and then we look at them and then we move forward. I don't know. Honorable Liz, let me give you an opportunity to say something.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This whole discussion really turns on whether or not documents were submitted, whether they were ATC'd and so on. And so I would request that we give Advocate Jenkins the opportunity to give us a legal opinion on whether that submission took place or didn't take place, or took place incorrectly. I would think, Madam Chair, and I don't want to speak for them, that National Treasury will be able to produce some sort of acknowledgement of receipt for the documents. I would urge the committee to ask Advocate Jenkins to give us a legal opinion about whether the documents were submitted in terms of the law or not. And that's really then would mean us then deciding whether we go ahead or not. If they were submitted legally, this discussion is moot. They've been implemented. structures are in place. Appointments have been made, as Honorable Schwanville has said. If that document was not submitted legally in terms of the law, well, then that opens up a huge can of worms as to where we are with this, with these appointments and the establishment. So I think it's key that we get that legal opinion about that clause about the submission to Parliament and whether it was followed or not followed.
Honourable members, the issue is not about whether the documents were submitted legally or not. There's an issue where we agreed on how we're going to proceed with the regulations themselves. There's two issues here. There's issue of submission, there's issues of the discussions of the regulations. I don't know whether Honourable Liz was there at that time, because I'm reminding you of how we agreed. We agreed that those regulations will come to the committee. The chair was even insisting, if I remember very well, he was very insisting that those regulations must be brought here to be discussed so that we can allay the fears of industry. So that's the part I also want to take into consideration, that as and when the law is being explained to us about submission, but the process of engagement must also be explained here, so that if I happened to have been absent on that day, I must be told that you personally, and you were not there, but this engagement took place on a specific day. Honourable Liz, you want to make a turn back?
Madam Chair, I really want to support what you're saying. However, everything that gets done in terms of the law,
mm-hmm.
and so we wanted to do exactly what you're mm-hmm. saying. So we gave ourselves 30 days to do that. And then we said, well, if we don't do it in 30 days, the regulations would then move ahead. And so if the submission didn't take place properly, then we'll still have that opportunity. If it took place legally, I'm afraid the 30 days is gone, and we've missed our opportunity. But I absolutely agree with you. That's exactly why we did this, why we put the 30 days there, so that we would have an opportunity to say, oh, these things may be in the main act we didn't look at, but we could look at in regulations. So I'm not arguing on that point. I absolutely agree with you. But we didn't write that specifically into the law. We said we would give ourselves 30 days, as I understand it, and Frank will give us a proper legal opinion. We didn't say the promulgation of the regulations would not go ahead until this committee has considered it, and maybe we should have done. Maybe we should have done. I don't know. But thank you. I do agree with you, though.
Honourable Member, we said it in good faith. We did not put it in law, but we had we thought we'll take our word for the discussions we had. But if we are going to limit it to law, that's fine. It is your decision. I don't have a problem as an individual, but. If there's a backlash, just remember how we will have proceeded. Honourable Maynor? Okay, Advocate Jenkins, are you ready? You may proceed, please.
I haven't found it, ma'am. I'm looking through the ATCs. There's no search engine. I need to open each one individually. Yes, it takes long. So I can... time permitting this afternoon, ask someone to look into it or go through them and do a search to see. But from what I'm hearing from National Treasury themselves, that it hasn't been tabled. So then let's just assume it hasn't been tabled. So if that is the case, which is a factual issue, Honourable Lisa, I can write a legal opinion, but let's then first table it before I can say whether it's tabled legally. So if it hasn't been tabled, it must be tabled. And then the whole process set out in Section 288 must continue. But
Roy, do you remember tabling that?
No, Chair, we definitely submitted them, and we submitted them to the committee. I'm not sure what happened to them after we submitted them. That, I think, is what I think the legal advisors must work out.
Okay, Honourable Members, do you see why Honourable Nguyen was making that suggestion? She was making that you must relook the whole process and postpone it. It's on the basis of this that you cannot give assurance from all sides, not from us, for now, from his side, from your side, and so on, just to verify, because we need to know what we are doing, whether we, before we adopt. Do you want to say something?
Yes, sir. I agree with Honourable Lise. You know, we did it. I think that is the issue. I think from our side is that, you know, we did want this 30-day period after we had submitted them. So it's not through any attempt on our side to, you know, to try and rush these through. I mean, we really tried. I think there were two sessions scheduled. There was also a session scheduled with the Select Committee. We really would have allowed, you know, we would have preferred an opportunity to engage with the committee on the regulations. In terms of the engagement with industry, we did publish the regulations for industry comment 6 weeks before they were submitted, or 6 weeks before we think they were submitted. And we got comments from four industry stakeholders. I don't think we got any comments from the Banking Association. We did get some comments, I think, from the Banking Association. And we did engage with the Banking Association. So we have had engagement with industry, but obviously we could have had more engagement with them in the committee. But then I think also we must just bear in mind these aren't like, you know, this doesn't, these aren't, maybe we should go into the content of the regulations, but we don't think that these are like crazy ideas. I mean, all we're really doing is allowing the chair of the Financial Services Board, together with the Executive Committee, to just run the organization until such time as the commissioner is appointed. And also, we've also discussed it, you know, if there are major issues that the committee is unhappy with in the regulations, we can obviously find a way of there is a procedure in the law to change it. So we could engage the committee on proposed changes. Yeah.
Okay, now we're coming to a point where we discuss materiality of is it still in process? Okay.
Chair, just before we move on to the next issue, I mean, if we assume that it's common cause that the regulations and the other supporting documents were not ATC'd, if we accept that, we haven't been able to verify that, but it seems that that is common cause, then in fact, in terms of the Act, the regulations were never submitted to Parliament. So it seems to me that what now needs to happen is that the regulations need to be submitted to Parliament following the correct procedure. They'll be referred to this committee, and then the committee would have to decide how they deal with those regulations during a 30-day window. My suggestion is that the regulations be dealt with in a very similar way to the bill with public hearings, but the committee will decide that. My real question is, given the fact that it now appears on the face of it that National Treasury did not comply with the law, then what are the implications, and I put this to Advocate Jenkins, of any executive action taken in terms of those regulations? Must all the executive action taken in terms of these regulations must be null and void, surely?
Honourable members, you see, we're moving to a different direction. I thought we said we're going to verify, because Roy says they submitted, but he doesn't know the status of that submission. So, you see, Alan is sitting here, he's the secretary of the committee, he should have received the regulations. I don't know where he and the chair took the document and so on in terms of its status. The chair is not here. Now, logically, what we must be doing is to postpone decisions just to verify this information, so that we check, because we shouldn't come to a conclusion that they were not, and then later on we find that they were, and then we've already taken decisions, you see, and so on. Let's give him chance, check if it was. The secretary is here, he need also need to make to respond if such a document was tabled, because submission, tabling, and as I've been warning you earlier on about terminology that you use and what it means legally in Parliament. So let's give him a chance, and then we'll come to
Thank you, Ms. Tobias. I received the regulations on the 15th of February, and my understanding at the time was that it's merely just for information, and I then obviously sent it through. But it is not, I as a committee secretary, even the chairperson, we can't table on behalf of the department. That is, you know, it's, we don't get involved there. So where it went after it came to me or who it went to, I really do not know.
Honorable Shivambu, now you understand what I was saying about how you, even what's written, if it's written submission or it's written, it's got legal implications in Parliament, so it can just end here and go nowhere in terms of the ATC. Okay, Honorable Shivambu?
No, so acting chair, the regulations that were submitted on the 15th of February are not the same as the ones that were utilized to now the law says that if the minister decides to change the contents of that, must follow the same procedure, right? So they changed the contents of the regulation, meaning that the first submission doesn't matter at all. It falls off. There is 288. So if they wanted to change the content of that, they then the regulations that they published on the 29th of March 2018 were supposed to be submitted in Parliament, and as definite fact, final fact, that such was not submitted, meaning that the Financial Sector Conduct Authority was not properly constituted. It was not lawful. So there are serious consequences in terms of what that entails now and in the future. It's not
you are a lawyer, isn't it?
You must not trivialize it.
You are a lawyer.
Chair, I'm not a lawyer. This is why I'm recommending our lawyer.
What's happening now?
I was just asking whether he's a lawyer.
Chair, there.
But I'm still speaking.
That's right.
No, don't.
So don't trivialize breaking the law, and you must not undermine this process. When we pass legislation here and we have certain expectations, it must be complied with without question, because that is what is expected. Whereas the executive should be at the forefront of compliance with the law. So there must not be some shortcut and explanations that no, there was no this and everything else. Because if you allow you to get away with this, you're going to do it recurrently and undermine the proper process. There are, of course, issues that underpin why you did that, because people were in a hurry to commit illegal activities for their own.
Is there that one up until we can justify
and
it?
And then deal with that in terms of it. So this is illegal in terms of what should happen. So the committee must take a posture that what it did is unlawful, and the process must be reversed to make it lawful.
Members, you see, we need to follow the law to the letter in relation to how we do and table important documents. And I said to you, if you don't do that, you will find yourself getting this type of responses from members to say that you the reason why you did it is because you wanted to do 1, 2, 3. And the reason why I keep on saying to Honorable Shivambu to park that part, because, you see, individuals who are involved are not here. They can't respond for themselves. And I don't want us to engage in an unfair process where we say so-and-so has done 1, 2, 3, and we don't give them a fair chance to respond for themselves. But the truth of the matter is that the process was not followed in relation to how the law stipulates how you table such based on how the new act is capturing the submission of regulations. Now, can we agree as members now that we take this as preliminary and then we'll come back and take that decision? Because I do not believe that we should finalize the regulations when we have not followed the procedures that we have put forth. Roy, you want to say something?
Yes, Chair. So I think we mustn't jump to the conclusion that, you know, the whole system will collapse if these regulations fall apart. The regulations fundamentally are only to allow for the appointment of a commissioner. So the coming into effect of the act.
You see, members are not saying the regulations as they stand are a problem. I'm understanding them to say that you did not follow the procedure in terms of tabling them. Now you are problematizing the issues that they are not problematizing. They have not spoken to the contents of the regulations. They have not yet arrived at that conclusion. And once when you do that, you're going to suggest that they are rejecting the contents. They have not rejected the contents yet. They are rejecting the process. So let's do it the right way, so that by the time we come to the content, especially I wanted to ask questions that relate to no direct provisioning for a commissioner, for instance, as the argument's sake. But we are not raising those issues because we can't raise those issues because we don't even know which regulations are we dealing with, the 15 February 1 or the March 1, and in terms of process of dealing with that, you see. So that when we say this is the final draft, it is tabled, it's adopted, it's ATC, we are engaging it. So let's follow that procedure. We'll try to fast track it because we understand the implications of the Prudential Authority and its functions and its operations. And you see, I'm acting chairperson, the plot keeps on reminding me, so I've got very limited powers to take decisions in terms of what is going to happen, you see. I'm trying to make it work as much as possible. So the chair is coming back, don't worry, it's just this week. He will be there, I'll brief him about what we discussed. He will come back and then he will give you the final dates and so on. But I you will see why it flowed at the beginning. I said, let's just take the presentations. Because I knew up front that we won't be able to take decisions today about this document. You want to satisfy yourself
can
with
I,
all
I give you a context
the things? Okay.
Do you know that the first draft of resolutions of the 15th of February were submitted, right? Which basically said that the FSB executive will be the transitional committee of the Financial Services Conduct Authority, right? And concurrent to that, National Treasury was investigating a Ms. Gibson, who was appointed as a consultant in National Treasury. And internal audit found that such an appointment was irregular, was wrong, and then the person who appointed her, which is DDG Moore, then changed the regulations to allow space for her to be appointed into the FSCA in terms of, so we're dealing here with a person who individualizes and personalizes National Treasury. Like it says, if it's a spaza shop, that no, if you can, I can employ you there, you must then be employed on this other part of the year. And then in the process, defies and undermines legal provisions. We cannot allow that. We cannot allow that. That is what systematically we've been fighting against, of people who individualize key state institutions for their own personal purposes. And that is what we should come out clear as a committee to say, such is inappropriate. Because I can tell you now that if we demand as a committee the internal audit of National Treasury on the appointment of this person who is now in the Financial Sector Conduct Authority, you will find exactly that there was a wrongful appointment, a lot of money paid to that person, and now that person is being given a different responsibility through an unprocedural process. That is the things that we must not fold our arms on, and we must not allow to let go without consequences on those that did that.
Yeah, you know, members, what I did not want us to discuss, because legally for now I was not sure whether we have powers, it's whether we can change regulations or not, Advocate Jenkins, you see, because my understanding is that we wanted the regulations to capture certain processes in relation to how the process to have the Prudential Authority in operation is going to fall. And now we are caught up in an administrative quagmire, which I'm not sure whether legally what is our role, Advocate Jenkins. So the more I try to pack it so that we follow the procedure before we find ourselves in the middle of something that I'm not sure for now what will be its status, it keeps on coming back. Now I'm going to allow it. You go in, you tell us, then we discuss it, because I don't know how to say we can go to this extent. We can't go to this extent and understand each other very well on that one. I've looked at you, Honorable Maynard. Let me first come here, because it becomes important as to
in terms of formulation of regulations, because regulations are executive authorities' prerogative and so on, the last time I checked. So I'm not sure which space are we now playing in. I want you on the safe side of the law as we get into that. Because, you see, these things has come to members now. That happened at the executive authority level. Now, let's see where does the law put us before we can even engage further on it. So, but I will not stop it from being engaged as long as legally we've been covered in terms of our role. Advocate Jenkins.
Thank you, ma'am. Ma'am, I think the... Just quickly, what this committee must do is to hold the executive to account, including checking the implementation of legislation. And that includes all law. So what we're dealing with is the principle of legality. In the Treasury, in the minister, like any other minister or any other public official, member of parliament, parliament administrator, cannot do anything that's not allowed, that's not in law. It must be in law. So the regulations as they are, if I now jump to that, they're not law yet. Especially if they've not been tabled properly. Parliament doesn't have to approve them, but once they're before Parliament for 30 days, let's forget about the issue of a material change in it. Once they've gone that 30 days, then they can be promulgated. So the Minister can then, in the Gazette, say, okay, these are now law. And in terms of those regulations, certain decisions can be taken. Now, decisions that have been taken purportedly under the regulations, whether the 15th February or the March 29th, and those decisions are in any case not valid because the regulations do not support them. They're still draft. Decisions that's been taken in terms of the Financial Sector Regulation Act will stand because that's an act. So that has been taken in terms of law. The internal operations, the internal audit issues and so forth, those internal mechanisms to ensure good governance are really, especially internal audit, that's usually determined in terms of an audit charter between the audit committee of National Treasury and the internal audit. And the internal audit will report both to the accounting officer, usually, but I haven't seen that charter, or to the executive authority, the minister. So it's in that sphere where these things are happening. Now, the motivations for taking certain decisions, ma'am, like we have said in this committee, if that's above my pay grade, I don't go into that. I look at the legal issues only. But certainly, when it comes to how the Financial Sector Regulation Act is being implemented, including establishing those mechanisms and appointing people, I mean, this committee can ask questions because that's your responsibility. Let me stop it for there. Thank you, ma'am.
Okay, before I allow members, can you clarify what is being gazetted if it has not been tabled officially?
I think the draft regulations were gazetted and then a further the March, 28th March was gazetted. So that's a public notice going out to say, please comment on these, we have changed them.
The second.
Both. So they get gazetted for the public participation or public purpose. That doesn't mean they're tabled yet. That's just an executive act. They didn't serve before Parliament to... If you committee... Theoretically can grab things, if I may use that term, from the government gazette or from newspapers and discuss it here. But what really is your duty in which you will report on, which will go back to the House, is something that's been tabled, the House has received it, ATC'd it, and then send it to the committee for either just consideration or for consideration and a report back. Usually only if a decision must be taken, there will be a report back. So it's only if there's a huge dissatisfaction with the regulations that the committee would report back to the House. Otherwise, the committee will consider it and the 30 days will expire and the regulations will then be ripe to be promulgated. So that's it.
Okay, before we take Honourable Main, I want to know whether are you going to be in a state of readiness to engage on the issues that implicates Momo now, or should we want to postpone that discussion for later, or I don't know.
Chair, I think we should just postpone that discussion. I think I'm not aware of an internal audit report, but I will. I mean, I'm not aware of any of these issues that were raised in the letter, and I will go back and find out if there are such issues. And I think it may be a case of us asking the Director General to investigate the allegations that were raised in the letter. But I personally am not aware of the the first time I found out about the allegations was actually when I saw the letter.
I've just got
two questions and then a suggestion on procedure, or one question. I mean, it seems possible, at least on the facts that we have, and I say just possible, that the executive action taken in terms of these regulations is probably unlawful and might have to be reversed or repeated, or there might need to be some remedy. Just so I can be clear, what executive action has been taken in terms of these regulations? That's the first question. And then just a suggestion on procedure, Chair. I wonder whether it wouldn't be a good idea for this committee, given what I think are the possible major implications for the executive of not complying with the Act, that we tread carefully and ask Advocate Jenkins to give us a legal opinion that traverses three issues. The first is whether the executive complied with the Act. The second is if the executive failed to comply with the Act, what remedies need to be put in place to ensure that the executive do comply with the Act. And then the third part would be what are the implications of failure to comply if indeed it is true or if indeed it is correct that there was a failure to comply, mm-hmm. and that we then adjourn the meeting. Mm-hmm.
Honourable Floyd, do you want to say something?
Let's get the responses as well in terms of, but also let someone that that internal audit to the Committee of National Treasury to get the status of we have written the letter, but I think that as a committee it would be appropriate that we get the necessary brief from National Treasury.
Do you want to respond before you say someone else?
Yes, Chair. I mean, in terms of Honourable Maynard's question, the only place we actually have to have regulations is Section 61(4) of the Act, which states that a process for the selection of persons for appointment as Commissioner or Deputy Commissioner must be prescribed by regulations. That's really the only place, and I think there was a view from the committee that we must have regulations to deal with that. The other thing is Section 304, which says that the Minister may make regulations for transition if the Minister feels it's appropriate. So it's not required that he makes regulations. So really the regulations are, the meat of the regulations really are this whole procedure to appoint a new Commissioner. And so I really would agree that we must regularize the regulations as quickly as possible so that we can actually appoint a Commissioner. That's really what we would like to do. So I think all the lawyers just engage in how we regularize the regulations as quickly as possible, and then we can appoint a commissioner. I think Edgar Jenkins has highlighted that the Act has come into effect. You know, the two authorities have been established. They're just without commissioners at the moment. So we really just need to regularize that so we can have a process to appoint.
Let's stop it at that,
yeah.
Because you see, Advocate Jenkins now has a task, because he's going to first report on the task to us, and then he's going to empower us to come to certain conclusions that relate,
yeah.
that relates to the regularities or irregularities of the procedures and so on, and then we will look at those other aspects that are important that you are raising, so it makes it easier. So we agree in principle that we're going to adjourn the meeting, having not adopted the regulations, given the discussions we had with the rider that says the process must be as quick as possible. So Alan, we're advising the chair to move very fast to make sure that the next meeting takes place and so on, and the terminology in the language and all that will be relevant, and then we'll move forward. But the questions that has been asked by members still needs to be answered by National Treasury, so those who are responsible will be here to respond to those questions.
because it's part of oversight for members to hold the executive to account and so on. Honourable members, I need to thank you on this issue. On this issue. No, you see, I don't know, but I don't blame you. I understand why. We are not at the end of the meeting on this issue. We're still going to entertain the presentation of UNA. We have never entertained it. I don't know what's wrong with Floyd today, but I understand, you see. I wish I had the same energy to move as fast as possible. You need to bear with me. I'm growing older and older every day. So you need to understand that I don't have the same. So here's a second presentation, which we need. It's not unrelated to the regulations. We are just discussing. Because Floyd saw something of interest, he wants to get rid of it now, and I'll allow it, you know. Because now you understand why I said, let's entertain the presentations. But only now he understands why I said so. Because now that he wants to engage, then he then understands why I said, let's entertain the presentations. Because they are not affected by procedures. So now I'm allowing him to raise those issues.
About the provincial authority.
Yeah, you go. That's what you want. And that's what I said you will do.
We need to give an instruction to the Reserve Bank that, because the Prudential Authority is the same as the governor is the chair and the deputy governors and everything else, that they must let go of their interest in African Bank. They can't regulate, they were partially before and own a bank. So 50% of African Bank is owned by the Reserve Bank. So there must be clear instruction that they should pull out systematically, because it has been created, it has been saved by and large. The results of African Bank released recently point to the fact that it's out of danger. The depositors' monies are safe. So the Reserve Bank should move away from that so that it can independently regulate banks without it having vested interest in terms of what happens. But that is one. And then two, you would know that 25% of the African Bank is owned by other banks. That is against competition law. So the Minister of Finance had used a section in the Competition Act to suspend powers of the Commission, which had rightfully raised a concern on the FNB, Investec, Ethnet Bank owning another bank. So it means that they participate in the strategy decisions of a different bank, which is their competitor, which in terms of the Competition Act is not permitted. So I think that we should raise an issue with the Ministry of Finance that they too should leave African Bank. They must dispose of their interest there so that African Bank exists as a separate bank on its own. Ideally, Chair, we should emphasize that the bank should be disposed to people who were historically excluded from owning banks, so that there is balance in terms of the financial sector transformation issues that we spoke about in the past. So it can be a combination of state and people who historically were not allowed to own banks. Thank you.
This one is your baby, Unati. This one, it's you.
Thank you very much, Chair, and I can be brief. So we have every intention, and I think the governor and the deputy governors have been already communicating this publicly, of disposing the interest that we have in African Bank. It is common cause that around the world, as part of a resolution strategy, sometimes the central bank and or a treasury has to warehouse an ownership in the institution that's being resolved.
So we own those shares purely because of the resourcing strategy and financial stability interests. So we're not in the business of owning banks. So that will be disposed and we will communicate publicly. Now, the question around competition.
Is there an important issue of transformation that it must be owned, that 25% must be owned by previously excluded? So
on that question, Chair, I will use the argument that Advocate Jenkins used earlier, that is above my pay grade, so I will make no undertakings on behalf of the sub around the questions of to who we are disposing of that interest. But on the question around competition law, we exercised that part with the full concurrence and consultation of the Competition Commissioner, and that was also done in the interest of financial stability. We respect fellow regulatory authorities and where we have to exercise powers that really affect their own powers, we do so with their concurrence and in full consultation. So that's how we exercised that part in terms of suspending the Competition Act around the resolution strategy of African Bank. So that would be my take on those two questions from Honorable Shivambu. Thank you.
Maybe at some point we might want to invite the Competition Commission to explain to us a certain rules. I don't know. I'm not the chair. I'm the acting chair. So when he likes, I'm the acting chair. When he likes, he wants to put these things on my head and so on. What do you want me to say?
Just quickly is that, you know, in the Competition Act, the Minister of Finance on issues that relate to financial institutions can take away the jurisdiction of the Competition Commission over certain determinations. So the Competition Commission did not necessarily concur. The Minister of Finance took that jurisdiction, and understandably for a temporary moment. But now that there is stability, that jurisdiction should now come back into effect so that there is balanced ownership and control of financial institutions. And now with a clear emphasis that in line with our commitment to redress and transformation, there should be the disposal of the bank into the hands in terms of ownership and control of those that previously were not allowed to own banks.
You know very well, it's a matter very close to my heart, and I don't know what you want me to do now in this meeting as the acting chair. You see, he knows. The full powers is that I said to you, at some point, let's bring these people here and say. But remember, the limitation of what we are doing is the role of the legislature is to enact. It doesn't give us certain powers. But we always try to convince you to look at other aspects that might have not necessarily been the aspects that you have looked at before. And my view is that if we're not going to look at them as the reserve, and I've been insisting on this one, that you know that. I've said that don't close your eyes on issues that you ordinarily have not dealt with before, but at this juncture you might want to deal with. And one of them is ownership and control. And whether it's through the minister or through somebody else, Floyd, UNATRI cannot go back. The department must take a decision. It can change the Banks Act. It can change the Reserve Bank Act and all that. It's not for them for now in this meeting, as we sit, to take that decision. You know that. So we need to. We've been moving a step forward, and we're going there. It's moving. This thing is moving. So it's taking a little bit longer, and then the young ones get impatient, and then they kill us and say we have not done nothing, and so on, and it's fine, it's so on. But it's moving, and it's going to arrive, and hopefully in our lifetime, some of us. But there is nothing materially that we want to engage now up until we've dealt with that process that is going, and there is no material changes on policy that we have identified so far, except one or two things. In principle, even Floyd will agree on this one. The issues of the levies, we once discussed it as to how they're structured and so on. I think we made peace with it at some point. I don't know, Freud is not saying anything about it. Maybe we'll look at this bill and make his own input at some point. But in earnest, I think we have come to the end of our discussion, honorable member. And I need to thank you for your valuable inputs and your understanding and your ability to bear with me all the time. Sometimes you give me such a hard time that you never give to the chair. But, you know, we had a wonderful meeting. So thank you for your time. The meeting is adjourned.
Sorry, Alan.